Yo, what's up, guys? This is Dave with Dynasty Dorks. We're a year-round fantasy football podcast, and we do Dynasty and Redraft content. Thanks for the follow. Good luck this week. What's going on, guys? It is Super Bowl week and Dynasty season is in full blast. And we have the release of the 2022 Sons of Dynasty book coming out. And I thought I'd bring Jordan on, preview it. How's everything going, sir?
It's good. Thanks for having me on. It's good to be here and talk a little Dynasty with you.
Yeah, man. And how's your dynasty season this year? Well, we'll definitely get into what we learned. Mm-hmm. But you know, how was your dynasty season this year?
It was good. I mean, it seemed long, right? I mean, it was a season. It was a week longer, which seemed like, you know, a couple of months longer, if I'm being totally honest. It was a grind. You know, some of the COVID stuff was hard. All the changing circumstances, like that was, it was a taxing year. But I think an enjoyable one, and I learned a lot from this year. And you know, I got to incorporate some different things in the book that I had never done before. You know, and that was a learning experience from this year. So yeah, it was I think overall it was a pretty good year. You know, and some of my players did well, which is always nice. And but yeah. It was a good year. It was a good year. What about you?
Yeah, it was a good year. Brought home a couple ships, mm-hmm. gotten a, you know, a lot of playoffs. And, you know, I thought Scott Fish had one of the most accurate tweets ever. And it was, right now, a lot of us are looking at all of our COVID dynasty teams mm-hmm. and want out. Mm-hmm. And I felt that. I felt that a lot of times, you know, Sunday morning when it was just like a job. Having to set all those rosters and make those changes, because those last minute things, you know, people mm-hmm. that are activated on game day or people that are put on the reserve the night before, the day of. And it was just, you know, best ball guys had it easy and dynasty guys were just really, really grinding. Because you got a lot of teams and a lot of different formats and, you know, you're like a quarterback change. How many dynasty superflex leagues are my end? You know, it's just, there was a lot of work, but. Let's get straight into it. We were just talking a little bit about DK Metcalf.
Yeah.
So explain to us what's on the screen.
Yeah. So this is my this is the Analytics Dynasty website. So you can take a look at it here. And this is one of the features we have over there for all our subscribers, yearly subscribers. It's our trade database. So you can go in and take a look at. Type in any player you want. You know, here we just looked at DK Metcalf, right? And it'll tell you all the trades, right? So what side he's on, you know, basically what he's traded for, and it'll tell you the formats too, right? This doesn't so much matter when we're talking about wide receivers, but we have, you know, we cover, you know, it'll matter more when you have premium tight ends or start two tight end formats or the like. It'll have a, you know, you can see sort of the differences in valuations between trades and players. So like right here, you have DK Metcalf traded for Austin Eckler, and that trade took place today, right? And so you have other ones involving Barkley, Metcalf, Logan Thomas for Justin Jefferson, Kadarius Toney, and Albert O, right? That happened yesterday. So yeah, you can go through here and you can find they're picking up too. I do a trade show every Thursday for subscribers to the Analytics of Dynasty as part of our Dynasty Daily podcast. And for like right after the start of the season, it was tough because there weren't a ton of trades. And you were trying to parse between whether you wanted to include stuff or whatnot. But now it's more of a, I mean, it has been really picking up the pace in terms of how many trades there's been. So
I had a trade thread going on, and it was Travis Etienne versus the 2022 class, and just kind mm-hmm. of trying to feel out where he fits in with that, because he really didn't, you know, didn't play last year. So you know, somebody had put on there that like nobody's making big trades right now. They're just making little trades. And I was like, I just made a trade for Cooper Kupp the other day. I just made a big, you know, bigger trade in Superflex. Like big trades are happening and people mm-hmm. are kind of positioning themselves for the draft. Cause you don't want to go into the draft without knowing where your team sits, you know?
Right. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, you know, and like here, we just looked at, you know, we just looked up Travis Etienne, and you can tell, like, there's a, you know, and there is, like, just take it from my personal experience, there's a significant ramp up in the past week of trades. And I've experienced that in real, you know, in real time as well. But I mean, it's all over the place, like the random 2022 first, right? We don't necessarily know where that is yet. Our system doesn't know until it rolls over where mm-hmm. that pick actually is. But, you know, you get him for even more than that, right? You get him for what I would argue would be less than that, Odell Beckham in a third. So it gives you an idea of where you're thinking about trades. And, you know, in addition to, you know, some of the content from the AOD 2022 edition, right, this is different in terms of, you know, this is more tactically actionable versus the book, which is more strategically an overview. So I think they work well and blend together.
Yeah. So where can you find this stuff, and what else do you got on here that people might be interested in?
Yeah. So you can go to analyticsdynasty.com. Like I said, if you're a subscriber to the website, Dynasty Daily Podcast, right? A podcast every day in the off season. We did 388 podcasts last year. You know, so had you covered basically every day and then multiple times, you know, we had more than 7 a week during the season. You get our trade database, you get all our startup data, my dynasty tiers, which will help you out in sort of thinking about players strategically. So you can find that all there, and then go find the Analytics Dynasty 2022 edition. That's over there as well. You can find, you know, that has all your big picture strategy. You know, it'll take you through the profiles you're working through, you know, some of the strategies you should be employing in your team build, which is interesting because this is book 4 for me and it's a yearly project, but this was a different one than I've ever really written in terms of, I wouldn't say I reject prior strategies, but I definitely come to, I think, some different conclusions and have chosen to really emphasize building dynasty in a different way than I've have in prior years. So it was pretty fun. It's a good, you know, it's a good experience there, writing that book as well. So you can find all that stuff at analyticsdynasty.com.
Awesome. No, anything else before we get into the top 12s?
No, let's do it.
All right. So let's get into this. So, you know, at the end of the year, a lot of times you look at the top 12s or the top 10s, and it's difficult sometimes because you have so many guys that have such boom weeks and such weak weeks. You want to see who does on a consistent basis. And this is not a consistency chart, but this is on a points per game basis. Who were the top guys? And just looking at the quarterbacks, you've got Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Kyler Murray, Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts. You know, there's a lot to be said about Jalen Hurts having the most QB1 finishes, but he wasn't the top guy on a points per game basis. Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Matthew Stafford, Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins. Anyone in that group stand out to you as an outlier, or anyone that's not on the list stand out?
I mean, I think Prescott's probably lower than you would otherwise expect. I mean, I think at this point in his dynasty valuation is probably as cheap as he has been for a while, and I suspect that he will rebound. So that would be the one thing. Yeah, the other thing, I wouldn't get too caught up. I tend to not care about, you know, the consistency of players because, especially at a position like quarterback, especially at a position like wide receiver, and even the high-end tight ends, you're not going to not play them. So it ends up not really mattering much how consistent they are. You know, people worry about like the boom bust wide receiver and that. In all honesty, like if you finish with 9 top 24 weeks in a given season, you're going to be a top 15 wide receiver. Like, and really no one much worries about that. So I don't really, you know, and I think a lot of people would say, you know, if you're just asked, well, that person was a disappointment, but almost always that person is a top 24 wide receiver. And most of the time they're a top 16 guy on seasonal points. So, and there's just not that many of them. So, you know, so that's the thing that I would say about, you know, when you look at these, like, you know, Herbert or Allen, like these guys are never coming out of your lineup, right? So even though Hurts is more quote consistent, you know, Allen and Herbert, right, they have probably, you know, a half a game win advantage on a guy like Hurts just because of the point difference. So that's really where you get your edge. So I think the biggest buy low for me in this range would be Prescott. And actually, I think the biggest sell for me, you know, if Burrow's going to go higher than Prescott, I think that's automatically right. That's wrong in my opinion for a number of reasons. Basically Burrow performing at the top of his, you know, at the top of his variance or his range of outcomes, based on, you know, all of his, he got very lucky this year would be what I would say. Whereas I think Prescott probably didn't for a variety of reasons, including the fact that he didn't really run. So I look at those two guys and I think it's an interesting dichotomy between them, but you know, Cousins again is at 18 points per game, you know, steady Eddie. And, you know, people want to knock him and ding him and all this. And all he does is really overproduce his costs. Like him and Stafford, it's been going on for like 3 years now. They just overproduce their costs. And they're really nice to have.
Yeah. And I like what you said about the consistency. I mean, when we talk about, you know, high floor, you know, high ceiling, those kind of things, really what you're looking for is if you were to put this guy in your lineup for 17 weeks and just not take him out of it. You know, if I told you, hey, if you flip the quarter and 6 out of 10 times it's going to be heads, you're going to pick heads. 7 out of 10 times it's going to be heads, you're going to pick heads. And that's what it comes down to with these guys, where on a points per game basis, they're at the top of the game and everyone's going to have a down week. But they obviously have, you know, at the end of the year when they finish a 12 or a 13, that they obviously had consistency somewhat to end up where they're at. Maybe a few outliers like Tyler Lockett, because they have such like huge variances when they have those 50-point games and then 3-point games. But a lot of those guys that end up in your top 12 or top 15 should be there. As far as the quarterbacks for me, I mean, it's there's a lot of interest when it comes to the top five, because Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, nothing's going to change there. I mean, obviously Josh Allen had a change of offensive coordinator, but really, you know, Herbert and Allen, you expect them to be the top guys next year. Tom Brady's out. He's, you know, he's retiring, supposedly retiring. He said he's going to be open. But I mean, he's out. And so Aaron Rodgers, there's a huge question mark with him. Apparently, Kyler Murray's relationship status is complicated. He unfollowed the Cardinals. And then you got Patrick Mahomes. And then you have Jalen Hurts. A lot of questions there with Jalen Hurts, where, you know, he took his team to the playoffs. He was a very consistent fantasy option. And you saw improvement throughout the year. But even then, there's still people saying, hey, they got 3 first-round picks. Why don't they go trade for Russell Wilson? Why don't they trade for Deshaun Watson? So you look at those top guys, there is a lot of things that can happen. And especially in your super flex leagues, quarterbacks are extremely valuable. And like you said, guys like Stafford and you know, Stafford and Cousins have continued to be, you know, guys that are just, you get bang for your buck. You know, with those guys, and they continue to be that way. It's going to be a lot of fluid. I think there's a lot of fluidity on the top there. As far as the running backs, so Derrick Henry obviously was not the top, you know, score getter because he missed quite a bit of games. For the record, I did 6-point scoring for all touchdowns and PPR scoring for all this. Mm-hmm. Derrick Henry had the highest points per game for running backs, almost 2 points higher than Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor scored more points than Austin Eckler scored more points because they played more games. But on a points per game basis, Henry, Taylor, Eckler, Harris, Fournette, Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey, Joe Mixon, Dalvin Cook, James Conner, DeAndre Swift, Nick Chubb. So for you, who stands out on that list?
Yeah, I mean, I've been a Fournette fan forever. And I think it's interesting, like when you go back and you look at past rookie classes, I think people would probably say, generally speaking, would say that Fournette was a disappointment from where he went in the draft. He has been nothing but a smashing success, right? Like, and again, it hasn't been maybe the smoothest arc, which I think is, you know, people want to value in terms of like the feel good factor of it. It might not have been the most feel good sort of, you know, being in on Leonard Fournette has, you know, resulted in the need for Pepto-Bismol at times between, you know, not between his rookie draft and now, right? It hasn't been a smooth experience, but you get a big combination of his rushing and his receiving this year. It comes into being a top five finish. You know, he's got multiple top 12 finishes in his career. He's just a very that's a really good result from where he, you know, from where he was in his rookie draft. And, you know, there were some guys drafted around him and above him as well, or below him as well, that have outperformed him. But for what he's done, like, that's a really good number. I think the other thing too is, I don't know. I know McCaffrey's, sample was small, but when you look at him, like, he has a ceiling that's just higher than anybody else. And that is just, if he, you know, from a receiving perspective, you know, the rate of his usage is just so high, in particular, like how many routes he's targeted on. He's targeted on like 33% of his routes last year, which is just an absurd number. So when you look at him, I think this number hides how good he can be, because of, you know, some injuries. I think he missed a couple portions of games too as well, so it drags it down a little bit. But you look at him and his ceiling is unmatched, and honestly that matches. I saw something, you know, as I was surfing the internet before we were starting, and I had the chance to back it up over the last like 4 or 5 years. Jonathan Taylor is like the lowest scoring running back one overall in terms of like points per game that we've had in recent years. And you know, when you sort of think of that, everyone loves Jonathan Taylor, but at the same time, like, you just put him next to Christian McCaffrey and it's just a different, you know, if you're thinking about ceilings, they're in totally different buildings in terms of their ceilings. So
yeah,
I think McCaffrey's one that right now at this point, you have to be, I think you got to be in if you're a contender, right? You have to sort of embrace some of the risk and be aggressive on him. And then at the downside, like, I think the Swift thing's interesting. Again, he's probably held back by a couple injury games there. You know, I have some other concerns about him generally. But once you sort of get out of the top, like, I think the big takeaway from this is once you get out of like the top 4, 5, 6, depending on how you sort of rank the guys in there in Dynasty, like, the difference between, you know, what, 5, 6, 7, right? I would say 6 to maybe 20 isn't really that big. And no. I think that when you, like, that should give you a little bit of pause. And especially when you look at some of these guys, you know, who's here, who's not, and where are they, right? It's a lot of this, if we were just to look at the season long finishes, ends up becoming injuries, right? And Joe Mixon, you know, posts a really high finish in years when he hasn't before. I mean, just because he saw an uptick in efficiency and was better, right? And he plays all of his games, right? And when you do that, right, if you're a starting running back for 17 games and you play every game, like, you're going to finish as a top 14, top 15 guy just by aggregation, right? So, I mean, that's kind of what you see over the season long thing. And this is definitely a position where I don't care about consistency at all, because what you'll see is, you know, you get, you know, the Derrick Henry 24 points, like, that's huge, because you add into that, you know, the games that you could have started somebody else, right? The games that you played Alexander Mattison on spot starts, Darrell Williams on spot starts, right? So this, when you look at it from this perspective, it's, you have to blend it a little bit, right? Because he played 24 games, like, he scored 24 points a game. He didn't play all the games. So you do have to sort of blend those things. You know, in terms of what you're prioritizing, it helps when they play more games, even though maybe it's a little bit lower in ceiling, but you can replicate that other stuff, right? You can replicate the other games, you know, with Madison or with, you know, Darrell Williams, Deonta Foreman, right? Just on and on and on of guys that were spot starts this past year. I mean, you could have been, depending on your format, Cordero Patterson could have played games where Henry didn't play, you know, Singletary, like, it could have just gone, it could go on and on with a list of those guys from this year. And, you know, that's a huge benefit at the running back position in particular, because you have a really good understanding of when to play those guys. And so that's a big, big edge, I think, at this position in particular.
Yeah. And, you know, I just want to pause for a second and just throw out there, you know, Underdog Fantasy, if you haven't played it, try it out during the Super Bowl. They have a special line for Joe Burrow that Joe Burrow just has to pass for over 1 yard for you to hit that prop. So if you can hit that prop and any other prop, you have a max of a $25 bet, and you can triple your money just with two props. So if Jamar Chase scores a touchdown and you pick the over, and you got over, what is this guy? And you got over 1 yard for Burrow, you get 50, you can get triple your money, $75. So use promo code Dynasty Dorks with your first deposit and get up to $100 per match. With Fournette and Connor, I think what's interesting here is these are some muddled backfields. So you got some discounts. And so when you're looking for some value on your running backs next year, look at those muddled backfields. And even if you drafted Ronald Jones and Fournette, or you drafted Chase Edmonds and James Connor, you would have gotten plenty of value, and you would have obviously had a top 12 running back. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to pay the price you did for Jonathan Taylor or Derrick Henry or Austin Eckler, and you got great return. So the other key to that, muddled backfield on a high-powered offense. I'm not going to get a muddled backfield on a bad offense. But you go and, if you were lucky enough to get, to get James Conner and Elijah Mitchell, or something of that type of combination, you wouldn't even have needed to have one of those top three guys. But if you did, let's say you had Derrick Henry and James Conner and Elijah Mitchell, which is a very likely scenario based on the price, you'd have been just fine during those weeks when Henry was out. And, when you look at these other players, I look at a lot of guys that get red zone touches. You want high powered offenses, but we know that, Najee wasn't necessarily on a high powered offense, but he got mm-hmm. the red zone touches. Same thing with Dalvin Cook, wasn't the highest powered offense, or Nick Chubb, but they got the red zone touches. Those are big to me. DeAndre Swift was interesting because he had like two halves. He had the first half of the season with Anthony Lynn, and he was getting peppered with targets like his name was Austin Eckler. Mm-hmm. And then Anthony Lynn got fired, and then he was just being used like his name was Nick Chubb. And what was great about DeAndre Swift was he showed you he can do both. He was productive in both ways. Obviously, PPR, you want to have those targets and that receiving production. But on a bad offense, he showed that he could be a good runner and a good receiver. I think Swift is a great buy.
Where does he rank for you in terms of, like, he's going to be Swift's going to be like a top four, top five guy, right? I think in terms of cost, right? You feel comfortable with him there?
Yeah. He's in my top five. I can't remember if I have five or six, but he's up there, not only because of age, but I mean, obviously the offense is just going to continue to get better. There's not much worse than where it was. Mm-hmm. They've done a nice job with the offensive line. They're, Dan Campbell wants to bite kneecaps and he wants to establish the run. I think that, they got Deuce Staley over there. I think Swift is someone that you can continue to buy on. And really, I love the fact that he can just, like I said, do it all. And Jamal Williams really did not bite into much of his production over there. Let's go to receivers. As far as the receivers, no surprise, Cooper Kupp was the top guy. Then you had Devontae Adams, Deebo Samuel. You had Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, Tyreek Hill, Deontay Johnson, Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown, and then Cordero Patterson, just a receiver in this year for my fantasy league, Keenan Allen, and then Stephon Diggs. So here you have some more, it's going to be some more change because you have Godwin and Antonio Brown who are attached to Tom Brady. Antonio Brown isn't even on a team right now. And then you have Devontae Adams with a lot of question marks with what's going on there. My question for you, if Jordan Love is the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers next year, in just your regular one redraft, Where's Davante Adams? Does he fall out of the top 12 of your receivers if Jordan Love's his quarterback?
I haven't looked at it that specifically in terms of like redraft, but I mean, I'll say this. I think we care too much about the specific quarterback, and we should care more about the targets, right? So if someone is, and they might be related, right? So is Jordan Love going to power an offense that's going to allow, an enormous target share for Adams? I'm not sure, right? Or enormous target number, I guess you would say. I'm not sure. Right? That would be more that I would worry about than I would necessarily worry about like how much, like how well Jordan Love performs, if that makes sense. Because I don't think, I think a target generally is worth a certain amount, and there's some variance that goes around it. But, if you get 160 targets, like you have a certain range of outcomes that's really elite, right?
Yeah. You have to have a quarterback that can sustain a drive. We've seen those quarterbacks, they can't convert third downs, and then teams off the field, they only get, eight possessions a game. And if, half those possessions end up in three and outs, you're really, like you said, looking at a very small amount of targets.
Yeah. But I wouldn't necessarily write off him. I know a lot of people have written him off. In terms of some of that stuff, but you look at some other elite guys this year. I mean, you look at, Jalen Waddle, and I don't think Tua, I think the verdict's still out on Tua, right? You look at Marquise Brown had some quarterback problems this year, and he was ninth in terms of targets, right? You look, Darnell Mooney was 11th in terms of targets, and he was, it was a good situation there. Brandon Cooks was 12th, 13th was Terry McLaurin. Right. 14th was Pittman. Right. I mean, none of those guys had good quarterbacks. Heck, DJ Moore was sixth, and he had maybe the worst quarterback situation in the league. Second was Deontay Johnson. Right. So as you start looking down these, it's becomes a, well, all right, well, how much, to a certain degree, I think it matters. Right. If you're on the field more because your quarterback can keep you driving. Right. That helps. But I think, I do think you can do it, and if he took a 10% reduction on his targets, right? I mean, I think that would be a reasonable, something reasonable to project. He would still have been eighth instead of being, second. So, the good part about drafting a guy like Davante Adams is he has he got a lot of wiggle room. Right. If something goes wrong. Right. And this is the same reason why Patrick Mahomes in Superflex is just such an elite player, because in a bad year, he's still at quarterback six. Right. Yeah. Like that's an enormous outcome. And with Devon, and what does he do in a good year? Right. He can tilt the entire axis of the league on its head. So that's, that's what you're sort of doing. And that's the same thing with Adams, but you have a lot of wiggle room. I think what the flip side of that would be a guy like Jamar Chase, who I don't think you have that wiggle room with, right? You had a player who didn't have a lot of targets, right? Who finished, much further down at the position. He was 18th in terms of targets, and he finished with 43 less targets than Davante Adams did. That's a big difference, right? That's a big difference. And when you look at what Chase did, a lot of that, his production was luck, right? In terms of stuff that you don't necessarily expect to repeat. I think he's a good player, but he's not probably going to lead the league in touchdown passes over 40 yards again, right? Neither is Joe Burrow going to lead the league by, multiple touchdown throws over, have that big of a lead in terms of touchdown throws over 40, right? Or 50, right? I mean, he's the league leader in those things that are fluky, right? So I think as you sort of look at those things, I think Chase probably ends up going ahead of Adams would be my assumption in February if Love were to happen. But I think that actually makes Adams a discount.
Yeah, yeah. And with Adams, he played one game with Jordan Love last year. He had a ton of targets. I think it was 12 targets, and he had about six catches for 40 yards the production you'll see. And they do a nice job in Green Bay of setting him up for some layups. And they feature Adams, that offense. A lot of, you know, a lot of receivers don't get that. And even with someone like Jordan Love, he's still able to get it done. But yeah, a lot of these quarterbacks, a lot of these receivers, you're going to see some change at quarterback with Deontay Johnson, another one. And then obviously Cordarrelle Patterson was just kind of an anomaly where all of a sudden Calvin Ridley's out of there. They can't get it done with Mike Davis. They're trailing a lot of games and they have him as this hybrid player. And then Deebo Samuel was used as a hybrid player as well. And a lot of his production at the end of the year, a lot of his production came from the running back position. And at the beginning of the year, it was primarily as a receiver. So interesting to see how those players were used. And then as far as, you know, as far as your usual suspects, one of the things I like about this exercise of doing it on a points per game basis, you do kind of see a lot of your usual suspects, and we'll see that more with the tight ends. You know, didn't feel that way sometimes during the year that these guys had great years, but really when it came down to it, they were, you know, they had good points per games. And so Mark Andrews was our top tight end. Kelsey, Kittle's a guy where obviously he's you know, had a smaller sample size, but when he was on the field, he did produce. Gronkowski started the year strong, had a little bit of a slow middle, and then finished strong. And then Darren Waller, he did miss some time as well. Tight ends were really, you know, difficult this year, just like always. But we had, you know, had the emergence of a few guys. Schultz showed us that he's for real with 2 years in a row of top 10 production. And then Dawson Knox broke out. Dallas Goedert, half of the year he had Zach Ertz with him. The second half he didn't. Kyle Pitts, Noah Fant, and then Zach Ertz. So what are your thoughts here when you look at the tight end board?
I mean, I think if you look at the shape of it, I think is a big deal, right? And this is something that in the 2022 edition of AOD I've looked at. Tight end is really steep. So if you look at the difference between, you know, Mark Andrews here at 17.7 and you come down to the tight end four, which is Rob Gronkowski, that's a 4.1 roughly. We'll call it a 4-point difference for rounding purposes. You know, the difference between Gronkowski, you know, 4 points from Gronkowski gets you in the, like, the mid tight end twos, right? So that is a big, right? That's a very steep drop, right? In terms of where you're looking for edges. So you want to be taking shots on guys that have elite ranges of outcomes at the tight end position. That is a big deal. It matters a lot. That's a huge edge that you can get. So you have to try to embrace those things. You know, Andrews was a guy that he went from being really low volume to they dropped back to pass more than anyone in the league this year. And when that happens, right, it's a, and you maintain that efficiency, you can have an enormous season, which is what he did. Right. And so that's a big, you know, that's, I think, a lesson we need to learn from that is these guys that, and I think Kittle's the same way, right? Kittle is constantly, you know, amongst, if not the most efficient tight end, just not on huge sample size. You know, if that were to ever flip on its head, you know, I think if you were to tell me, hey, you know, Jordan, you have to pick, you know, one of the tight ends that's active right now has the greatest tight end season in history at some point, you know, or to date, right? You know, going forward, that one of the guys that's active right now does that, who would it be? My bet would be Kittle, because, you know, his ceiling is on a per route basis has been by far the best, and it's consistently been the best. It just hasn't been a huge volume. So I think you look at things like that, and that it, this shows up why that's really important, because you need, you know, the Andrews outcome is such a big deal, particularly at the tight end position, because, you know, 4 to 14 blend in really close, right? So if you can be top three, right, that's really, it's like a roller coaster, right? It's a steep drop off the top and then it sort of flattens out. That's totally the tight end position. So Andrews and those guys, that's a big deal. You know, trying to find those guys later on at the position makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, and I really try to avoid those middle guys. A lot of times you're passing up on really good players for mediocre production. Mm-hmm. So you either go for broke or you take a whole bunch of shots on these other guys. When you look at the board and you see Travis Kelce, you know, I've been someone that's, you know, last year I said, listen, if you're selling and you're not contending, you want to sell Travis Kelce because he's got one or two more years left. He continues to do it. Are you selling Travis Kelce?
There was an
argument like Kyle Pitts or Travis Kelce straight up, you know, this offseason.
Yeah. And I mean, so here's the thing that I think is interesting about that is with Kelce, right? When you look at these, especially in like a tight end premium league, you know, in a non tight end premium league, if you don't have the elite guy, they tend to blend together, right? That stuff gets, you know, I don't know if you'd call it wider, right? It gets steeper as you incorporate more premiums that make, you know, the higher end guys, right? If you're doubling the value of a reception, right? The gap between the guy that has 90 receptions and the guy that has 50 receptions, that opens up, right? So it gets steeper up at the top. You know, and so you look at these, you know, and one of the things that I talk about in the analytics of Dynasty is, you know, is these, it's a concept called warp, which is wins over replacement player. And so when you start looking at the stats of these guys and you start understanding like, all right, what does a point gap actually mean? It ends up showing up in terms of an actual win number, right? So for example, last year, Kelce threw his, you know, and I measure it through the regular season. So that gives you an idea of how many games you would actually benefit in the regular season to try and figure out, you know, making the playoffs and the like there. But yeah. Kelce averaged 20.8 points per game in a tight end premium league, right? So if you're thinking about this, you take it to its logical end at that. That's 6.1 points more than Kyle Pitts. And I think Kyle Pitts did really well as a rookie, right? But that's a win. Right. That is short of a win, right? That 7 to 8 points is usually a win, but you know, 6 is basically you won an extra game because you had Kelce instead of Pitts. Now Pitts, you sort of have to think about like, all right, now Pitts has to sort of catch that, right? And when does he catch that, right? Does he, you know, I think I would probably still take Kelce over Pitts this year. And then, you know, if we're looking, you know, if we're making 2023 bets, like that's probably be the first time I would take Pitts over Kelce in terms of, you know, his season long. But at that point, you know, Kelsey's probably banked a win or maybe even more on Pitts. So Pitts then has to sort of catch that on the back end. And you have to figure out how you value that, right? How much do you, you know, if he's going to win you over the first, you know, over, you know, if you were in a startup draft last year and Pitts is going to win you a game more than Kelce, but that game is in 3 or 4 years from now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's a value, right? That's the dynasty debate forever. You know, so that would be the thing. I actually think that the better argument instead of Pitts would be to take Andrews because I think Andrews is right in the middle of his prime.
Yep.
And when you look at it, I mean, he has, you know, he's up there with Kittle in terms of the ceiling thing. I think Pitts has it too. You know, I think that's a really interesting debate because again, I would take Andrews, I think, over him in terms of a 2022 finish, right? And if you did this last year, right, going through the same thing, right? He already banked a win more. If you do it again this year, and then you're gonna start the interesting part is you're gonna start running up against some quarterback issues with Atlanta. All of a sudden you can project a problem for Pitts that, you know, through 3 or 4 years of having him, it's been a frustration because you've gone through quarterback change, right? You've gone through a decline in Matt Ryan, a quarterback change, right? All the weapons are different, right? It's not a good system. It's not a good situation. And I think the Baltimore situation is more projectable for as much as you want to actually do that. So I do think it's an interesting debate there in terms of, you know, what do you value with Kelce? What do you value with Pitts? You know, and for me, I don't spend a lot of time worrying about future valuation typically. I think maybe this would be the area where I probably would think about that if I was going Kelce versus Pitts because you're limiting your outs if you take Kelce and something goes wrong. But I wouldn't probably so much worry about that in Andrews versus Pitts world because I do think you've got leeway with Andrews as well. So I think those are interesting things and it all becomes basically what you value because if you did it last year, you're already up a game. And it's a lot for Pitts. Pitts has to hit a ceiling and Kelce has to fall off for that to be a difference here over the next couple of years. Like, it is a, you know, it's a lot to catch up, right? That's a lot of, you know, it's yeah. it's like starting, you know, it's like starting a 10K 10 minutes after the person, you know, you're racing. That's a lot. That is a lot of time. Yeah.
And people are, you know, when you look at these trade polls on Twitter, you know, they're looking at them with no team attached in a vacuum. You have to give a 5 to 10% curve based on age, because people are just going to go, well, Kyle Pitts is 21 years old. Travis Kelce's 33 years old. They're going to just see that. And that's where they jump all over it. And of course, like, it makes sense to take someone that's that young. But when it comes down to it, you know, maybe, like you said, going back down towards the middle of it, going, it youth is great, but you got a guy that can win games now, and he's going to do it for a long time, and he's proven it. Kyle Pitts was, you know, he was solid last year, but, you know, how long is it going to take him to catch up to Andrews? And do you really want to play that, you know, as far as your struggle?
Right. And I think you continue sort of on that line, and you think about, all right, well, if I take, right, what's the opportunity cost of taking Pitts? Right. It's, well, if I'm in a, especially like in a tight end premium super flex league, that sort of thing. If I'm going to take Pitts up at the top, you know, he's a first round startup pick. According to our data, we track startup drafts, and there's been a limited number of them. They really pick up after NFL flips over the year. That's when they really start to amp up, but he's going at 110 basically, and where they've, you know, in the tight end premium drafts that we have. And that's in the range of like Dak Prescott and some other guys, right? You know, that's ahead of Andrews, for example. But, you know, you look at that, and there's elite quarterbacks in that range that you're going to have to probably pass on to take Pitts.
Yeah.
And if you come down and you look at, and you say, all right, well, let's pass on that, but we're going to take, you know, I think the play this year is to take the cheaper of Kelce or, to take the cheaper of Kelce or Waller. When you look at Kelce, he is at a tight end 7 right now at 402. I mean, that's an area where you're talking about Mac Jones as the quarterback.
Yeah.
Okay. So would you rather go Dak Prescott and Travis Kelce, or would you rather go, you know,
Kyle Pitts and Mac Jones?
Right. I think that's really the question that you have to ask, and that's ultimately the big thing. So,
yeah, no, I love that. I love that, and that's for me. That's, I'm taking the Kelce and then Prescott. You know, it's always interesting this year, you know, looking back at things, and then obviously, you know, when you have these moves that are going on right now, there's a lot of projection, and things are going to change, and you know, you've seen 2 years in a row where massive quarterback changes have led to Super Bowl appearances. One, Tampa Bay said, Jameis Winston, thanks for 5,000 yards and 30 touchdowns. We're going to get the GOAT. Tom Brady goes down to Tampa. They play a Super Bowl in Tampa, win it. The Rams traded for Matthew Stafford, got rid of Goff, said, listen, we need an upgrade. Thanks for taking us to the playoffs, you know, 4 or 5 years in a row. We want to go to the Super Bowl. They're in LA playing in the Super Bowl this weekend. We got Russell Wilson. We got Deshaun Watson. We have Aaron Rodgers. A lot of potential moves. And there could be dominoes that fall with that. If one of those guys goes, you know, let's say one of those guys goes to Tennessee. Now Ryan Tannehill's on the move. What if one of those guys goes to Philly or Miami? Then Jalen Hurts or Tua is on the move. So there could be a lot of different things. We know that Jimmy Garoppolo is most likely going to be on the move as well. So do you see a guy like Noah Fant and say, listen, there is a scenario out there where Kenny Pickett is his quarterback next year, and that's probably not the most ideal scenario from a fantasy perspective. But there is a world where Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers or Deshaun Watson is his quarterback next year. Do you go get Noah Fant now? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are thinking that. So I think that's where he's probably overvalued, would be sort of my thought, because I think that there's a decent amount of that that's baked into his cost, right? So that would be my caution, my hesitancy in doing that. I would rather probably sort of in the same range just take Waller, right? For example, that would be something that I would think about doing. When you look at tight ends, I would say that, and this is something I found particularly recently, is that tight ends, right, if you're not elite, right, if you're going to be elite, it shows up really early, right? Kelce, from basically the minute he stepped on the field, was an elite producer on a per route run basis, right? The volume wasn't totally there at the beginning, but he was an elite producer. Gronkowski, heck, Andrews, Kittle, all of these guys have been elite early producers. Hockenson has not been, neither is Fant. And so I don't really love getting into investing in that range a ton, just because I think there's a lot of signal early in a career when the person hasn't stood out. And I think that that's what we're seeing with Fant. So I know that he could benefit from a situation and the like. I wonder sort of if he sort of has that elite ceiling in him. You're betting on a lot of things to go right.
So you're saying sell Fant.
If he's going to go, it depends on what you're talking about, right? I'd rather have Goddard than him, for example. I would move Fant up to, I would move Fant plus to go get Andrews, right? Like, that's a move rather than hoping that things go right for Fant. Like, I'd rather take the jump now, or pivot to, I think Goddard has a markedly better profile than Fant does, for example. And it's independent of quarterback. He's just a much more effective player than Fant is. So those would be the things that I would doing. I don't get a ton into, but it's a limited, it's the same reason why when you look at the shape of the scoring, I don't get a ton into like tight end, five or six. Like after that, there's a very limited amount of investment that I'm going to do from like tight end 7 to like tight end 15. It's a very limited investment because I don't think the payoff is all that big. And you're basically making a very similar bet at 16 as you at tight end 16 as you are as tight end 8, right? This is a very flat range. So I tend to let other people make those bets outside of extreme situations. I think Andrews last year would have been one, and Goddard maybe this year as well.
All right. Well, we've gone through the top 12 at each position. We've talked about the book. Anything else that you want to talk about before we get out of here?
No, I mean, this is a good time to start to, get into some startup drafts, get into some dynasty trading. One of the big things I think about this time of year is you should really focus on your process, right? And there's so much that we don't know about players, right? To think about strategically, to think about what you're doing with your dynasty team, what your aim is, right? And to go through, one of the things that I tell my subscribers is right now you spend the time, you go through and you figure out with each team sort of, here are 3 to 5 things I need to do, right? Here's how my team gets better from last year, right? Here's things that could work out better for me. Here's things that could work out worse for me. And, here's 3 to 5 things I need to do to make my team better, right? And I think spending a lot of time doing that, right, that's something we talk about a lot. And I think you can do that right now. I think that's probably your biggest edge right now. I think people get into studying rookies and the like, which there's plenty of time for. But I think if you take a step back even before that and just work on some of your fundamentals of your teams, it'll give you a bigger edge than necessarily your rookie studies will do. And I think the Analytics of Dynasty can help you do that. So get the book, the 2022 edition. It's on sale at the site now. And consider being a subscriber, and we'll talk every day. So you can do all that as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on. Make sure you guys do that. Make sure you guys give him a follow on Twitter as well. Thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. And hope to talk again this offseason.
Yeah, sounds good. Looking forward to it.